Welcome to Words and Pictures, the show about the narrative arts. I'm your host, S.W. Konser, and today we're talking about making nonfiction comics. This is a how-to book of sorts published by Abrams Comic Arts, and the authors are veterans of graphic memoir and comics journalism. Larry Harris has served as the feature editor of The Nib. More recently, she's been a guest editor in comics journalism at the University of Technology, Sydney, in her home country of Australia, as well as at the California College of the Arts and the Center for Cartoon Studies here in the States. Welcome, Larry. Great to have you back on the show.
Thank you.
And Shay Merck is a graphic journalist, teacher, and zinester. She's been the contributing editor at the graphic journalism website The Nib, as well as digital engagement producer for Reveal at the Center for Investigative Journalism. Shay, thanks for joining us once again.
Hey, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, Shay, Larry, we mentioned The Nib magazine. Let's start with a bit of background about The Nib. This was a Portland-based publication that lasted a decade from 2013 to 2023, but it had a global reach.
Yeah, The Nib was really special to a lot of people. And it started off, our founder, Matt Bors, made The Nib and was just really wanted a place to bring together artists who had a really political focus and who had something to say. And so Larry joined as an editor first, and I joined as an editor later. And through that, we published 15 issues of a print magazine and hundreds of comics on the website.
Yeah, like actually thousands of comics. I think we worked out towards the end that I'd edited over 1,000 feature comics. So
yeah,
a lot.
And so, yeah, after 10 years, you know, we decided it wasn't financially sustainable to keep going. Matt was getting pretty burned out. But it's really special to think that like that archive of all those comics still exists online. People can still read them all for free. And I talk to people all the time who use them in their classes, who use them for inspiration for their own work. So it's really had a big impact in creating like a new generation of cartoonists.
Yeah, I feel like it's also really contributed to the discourse around nonfiction comics making. And I feel like I hope this is true anyway, but I feel like we were able to sort of help establish what the possibilities were with nonfiction comics. And we published so many different kinds of people on so many different kinds of topics. It was like, yeah, I hope that it opened up some doors. Yeah.
Yeah. So comics journalism has really come up in these past few years. And you've also both been involved with museum exhibitions of comic art. One show was a group exhibition called Art of the News.
Yeah, that was at University of Oregon a couple of years ago that brought together a bunch of artists, many of whom were contributors to The Nib who had done comics journalism. And so this book kind of builds on that tradition of comics journalism, expanding sort of how to make comics from just, you know, building on work like Joe Sacco, who's interviewed in the book, or T. Bowie or Durf, who are all interviewed in the book, to also including people who are doing graphic memoir, people who are doing science comics, people who are doing any kind of nonfiction storytelling. And obviously we're both very inspired by artists like Joe Sacco, who are kind of that first generation of comics journalists. And now people are building on that work to do all different kinds of cool creative stuff and approaching comics in their own ways. And that's what we wanted to capture in the book. In the book, we decided to frame each chapter around a different ecological place. And so, for example, there's chapter on research is set in the oceans. It's a story about whales. It's a story about the ocean. There's a chapter, the graphic reportage chapter is actually follows a student climate crisis. So we really wanted to weave environmental themes into the book by visually representing, here's all these different ecoregions of the world and depicting that to kind of try and like make the book have maybe a subtle environmental focus. It's not something we're like banging people over the head with, but that like as you're reading the book, you're really thinking about how the environment is woven through all these different stories.
I mean, we're human beings. We're inherently connected to the country that we live on. Like that's part of who we are. And one of the important things for me with this book was, you know, we needed to talk about how to make nonfiction comics by showing through example. And so each chapter has an example story that runs through it. So we can, you know, show how you might do something. And some of those are kind of silly. Like we have the whole St. Bernard chapter, you know, set in the Swiss Alps, which was actually really funny. I would not call this a 100% serious book. There are a lot of jokes in there. I'm not a 100% serious person and neither is Shay. So, you know, it's a fun book to read. It's not just gloom and doom. Yeah.
So I called the book Making Nonfiction Comics a sort of a how-to book, but along with the tutorials, You've got a lot more in there. You include conversations, like you said, with some very prominent folks in the nonfiction comics field: Joe Sacco, Sarah Glidden, T. Bui, Derf, Back Derf, Malaika Gharib, Nate Powell.
To name a few, there are 40.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a huge range of input about how they go about doing what they do. And it's interesting how you incorporated all of these into your various chapters of the book.
Well, each of the chapters in the book kind of breaks down a different aspect in the practice of making nonfiction comics. And because both Shay and I came from a journalism background, you can really see like how our approaches are kind of similar in that way. And we like have a, you know, we set it up with a how to do research, how to think about writing, how to conduct interviews, how to do graphic reportage, like going out in the field. And each chapter, we tried to ask questions of cartoonists that have a very speciality part of that area. For example, Sarah Glidden talking about interviews because she's had a lot of experience with interviews. And we had, like, speaking of Portland, we had Nicole Georges talking about memoir and, like, you know, best practices for, you know, using your, you know, own life stories. So that was kind of the idea. But for us, it was really important to showcase the other works that exist out there and the different ways that people make comics, because I feel like a lot of how-to books or guides on how to do something really only show you the way that the author knows how to make something. And for us, it was like, we're by no means the only way or the only experts in this field. Like, we're just people who are, you know, really keen. And I think we probably do know a lot about making nonfiction comics because of our experiences as editors and makers. But we wanted to show that there are so many different other ways that people do things. And here are some of their thoughts on best practice for that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I would say every cartoonist sort of has found their own way to making their comics. You know, everyone as they're going along has kind of developed their own practices and their own techniques and has solved problems for themselves. You know, for example, in certain, when you're depicting your own memories, like what can you change? What can you not change? Like, how do you deal with all those aspects that come up with making nonfiction comics? Like, everyone has sort of found their own solutions to those questions. And so we wanted to say, you know, there's not one right approach to making comics. Everyone has their own visual voice and their own style. So when you look at 40 artists together, what kind of patterns line up between them? How have all these different people approached making comics, not just us? And hopefully it feels like a chorus of voices that readers can resonate with. You know, we also included examples of everyone's art. So everyone has like two or three panels from their work. And that was really important to show because I feel like when people think of comics, oftentimes the response people get is like, oh, I can't draw. I could never do that. And I really wanted to have us show, you know, here's 40 different examples of what art can look like in comics. Maybe you can find something that looks like something that you want to make, that you want to create, and could be a match for your style.
So you mentioned your background in journalism. This brings up a big subject. Whenever people talk about journalism, they talk about objectivity versus subjectivity and implicit bias. You have some thoughts on this that you express in the book.
Yeah, there's a really great panel in the book where me as a character is saying, like, we can all agree that objectivity is a myth, right? One that's built on like cis patriarchal white supremacist standards, right? Right. And so, yeah, that's a grounding element of our work on the book. And something that we ran into as journalists is really feeling like sort of mainstream, old school media outlets wanting to pretend that there's no subjectivity to what you're creating. But whenever you're writing an article or making a podcast or editing a piece, you're always bringing your personal background and experiences to it. What you think is important, what you think should be included or left out, or how you frame an issue, so much of that is shaped by your own personal experiences, your race, identity, your background. And so, one thing we point out in the book that's like really cool about comics is that you can very clearly tell that they're made by a human. You can see the human hands in the line work. And readers just immediately understand that a comic is like made by a person who's capturing the world from their perspective, and that there's things that they're going to leave out and that there's things that they're going to include. But it's a very human-centric work. A lot of times, comics can be a refuge for people who want to express opinions and ideas and stories that are not covered a lot in mainstream media. What's really cool about comics is you can make and publish a comic with just a piece of paper and a pen and a photocopier. You know, you can do it for 10 cents. So that makes comics a pretty democratic medium where you can get it out there with whatever story you have to tell. There's not like a lot of gatekeepers you have to go through, like if you're trying to, for example, get a film produced or something like that.
Yeah, and I think there's also fewer gatekeepers as time has gone by because people are able to use social media to get like attention, although we could argue about what the future of that is looking like and how that's changed. But I know that certainly in the last, 15 years, heaps of artists have been able to make big names for themselves who are from different types of minorities who might not previously have been the kind of person who would get a gig doing a regular comic for a paper or something like that. So I think there is that massive shift. And I also do really like the honesty that comes with cartooning, where it's like this was made by a person. And I think that we try and conceal that in traditional journalism, and it's sort of frowned upon to have like a your personal attitude. I remember when I was studying journalism at the Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology, and my lecturer was like, saying how before online opinion blogging, it used to be that you only got an op-ed after you'd been a journalist for a while, and we could trust your opinions because you knew what you were talking about and you'd seen some things. And I don't think that's a true story. I think that lots of people have important things to say regardless of their background. And I'm really glad that we're able to access voices through comics in that way a bit more.
Yeah, and that like in comics journalism, there's a real rich tradition of people putting themselves in the story and showing themselves as the editor. Joe Sacco's most famous person for doing this probably. He draws himself into his stories, and how he's telling the story is part of the story. We see that with Art Spiegelman too, and Mouse, of course, part of the story is how he's telling the story. And so I feel like they've created this foundation that is like, it's totally good in comics to show who you are as the creator and how you're going about approaching the story. And now we see that right now. I'm reading Ben Passmore's new book, Those Black Arms Hold You Up, which is about the history of Black resistance in the United States. And Ben is like the narrator. He's kind of the guide through the book. He drops himself in there responding to these moments in history. And I see that's such a beautiful thing that comics can do, is have you be the guide through the storytelling and incorporate how you're telling the story into the story that you're telling. And that's just a beautiful thing that comics can do.
You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and we're talking today about making nonfiction comics. There's a book out co-authored by our guests today, Shay Merck and Aleri Harris. Now, before we get back to the conversation, I'd like to take a moment to remind our listeners that KBOO is in the midst of our KBOO Fights Back membership drive. We hope that you've been enjoying our programming and that you'll take a moment to pledge your support. There are all kinds of ways to join KBOO. On the web, you can visit kboo.fm/give. You can also text KBOO to 44321. And if you prefer to go analog, we're always happy to receive a contribution in the mail. The address of the station is 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. Again, the webpage is kboo.fm/give. On your mobile device, you can text KBOO to 44321. And of course, you can reach us by mail at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. And now, let's talk some more with our guests, Shay Merck and Aleri Harris. Shay, you tell a personal story in the book about getting called out by Aleri for underwhelming research on a piece.
Yeah, this story in the book is in the chapter on interviewing, and I start the chapter with a little story about me reporting a comic for the Nib about abortion rights in South Dakota. And at this time, South Dakota had like the worst rating for reproductive rights in the whole country. And where I live in Oregon, pretty close by, has the best rating for reproductive rights. And so I wanted to kind of compare and contrast like what it would be like for people trying to get an abortion in South Dakota versus Oregon. And I had written the script as kind of a hypothetical. I was like, imagine there's like a fictional woman who's like trying to get an abortion, and she has to like jump over all these hurdles. What kind of hurdles would she face? And Aleri read the script and was like, it's just not good. Like this is a fictional scenario you've imagined. This comic would be a lot stronger if you actually interviewed people in South Dakota who are experiencing this, interviewing people who are working on this issue versus just your imagining of what they're facing. And I was like, you know what? You're absolutely right. I was taking a kind of like, I would say a lazier approach. I was on like a tight deadline. I wanted to get this done. And I just sort of like wanted to just make this comic happen without having to actually talk to anybody. And so I went back to the drawing board and actually reached out to a bunch of abortion rights advocates in South Dakota and interviewed them. And it made the comic so much stronger than it had been before. It was this different story that I was telling, and it just really showed the power of doing an interview.
Well, the upshot of the story seems to be you didn't have an instructional guide when you started out. So here's this book now making nonfiction comics. Here's this book that tells the reader how to avoid the most common mistakes.
Yeah, and we actually have a whole thing in there, which is we have a page which is rookie mistakes that people make. And some of the mistakes, I would say all of them are probably mistakes that we've made.
Yeah, definitely.
I went to university and studied journalism, and I learned a bunch of stuff about journalism there. And some of that helped me with comics, and some of it didn't, you know. And I think that everyone has things they could learn or get better at. And this, we were sort of, I think we used to joke. When we were working at the NIB in the Portland office, we would be sitting there being like, oh, wouldn't it be great if there was a book about how to do this that we could just send everyone? Because I worked on thousands of comics with different people, and each time we worked with a new person, it felt like sometimes we were teaching them how to do a thing, you know? Not always, but a lot of the time it did. And it felt like we've got this, like I made all these instructional booklets to give people that were about layout, you know, and things to know about. You need to have at least this many interviews in order to make a piece that's 40 panels, you know, like that kind of advice. And I feel like this book for us is like, we pitched it basically to be like, we have all this information and we need to share it. And we want to empower other people to make more work like this. So.
And I teach classes on making comics, and people show up in the classes and have so many stories to tell and have so much they want to process through comics, and they have such a hard time getting started. Where it can be really overwhelming if you've never made a comic before to figure out, like, how do I even get started on this? You know, I've read some comics that I love, but I don't even know how to begin the process. And so that's who we really wanted to make the book for, was for people who like want to create their own comics and are maybe having trouble getting started. And it can be a really helpful guide and like supportive friend through the process.
Even people who are cartoonists who have not, like just never made something nonfiction, this could be helpful for, you know?
Yeah, a lot of people are very nervous about making nonfiction. You know, in the classes I teach, people like want to make a lot of fantasy comics, sci-fi stuff. And then if I say make a comic about yourself or a real life story, people like freeze up because they're like, oh no, that feels really scary because it's the real world. It feels higher stakes. It's like giving an opinion on a real life issue. I'd rather just stick to my like sci-fi fan art, you know? And so we want to make nonfiction comics less scary for people and be like, look, this is something that really anyone can do. You can take this on. It's not something that you need to be like a super brilliant specialized genius for. Anyone can make comics in their own style, in their own way, about the real world.
Now, at the same time, comics journalism is journalism, and there's always a set of ethics. And comics journalism, it's going to be a slightly different set of ethics than sort of traditional print journalism. In the book, you talk about interviewing and how sensitive you are to certain topics when interviewing people. And a traditional print journalist might just dive in there. They've got a deadline to meet. As a comics journalist, you can always come back. You can always back away a little bit from touchy topics and come back later, that sort of thing.
I mean, I think for every journalist, it depends on who you're working for, what the purpose is, and what's like, you know, how much time you have. You know, I've done news reporting where you literally, this is the moment that you have and you need to get a quote from someone in broadcast in particular. Like, this is what you need to do. But I've also done like feature writing for magazines where you actually do have heaps of time and you can sit with a person for 2 hours and talk about them. I also studied oral history at university, and I have a history background. And I think that one of the nice things about oral history is that most people, when you try and talk to them about their life, or even a big event in their life, need to tell you a bunch of other stuff before they can get to the point where they can answer your questions, because they have a narrative in their mind already that they've already set upon, and that's just the narrative that they whenever someone says to them, "Hey, remember that thing?" They're like, "Oh yes, that thing happened in the summer of this year, and I was doing all of these things." And they'll give you all of that, and they need to tell you that before you can actually talk to them about it. And sometimes that's connected to, like, some kind of emotional experience that, maybe there's trauma there or not. And we do have a whole thing in there about trauma-informed reporting. But I don't think that I think that the way that I approach the pieces of the comics that I do is not terribly different from the way that I've approached working as a journalist. Because I do think, really, with journalism, you are taking as much time as you can, depending on what the final product is. The difference with comics is, I suppose, is that you are also trying to think outside the box and think creatively about how you can display information. And you also have tools to tell stories that maybe can't be told otherwise. Like when we were in Seattle, we did a Seattle book launch over the weekend, and we had Fahmida Azim with us, who was a Pulitzer Prize winner for a piece that she did with Business Insider. And it's like an amazing piece about a Uyghur woman, and it could only be made as a comic because there was no way, like, that woman, her identity needs to be concealed, and we don't have images of the places that she was detained, so you can't really do it as a you'd have to if you were doing it as a documentary. You would have to have all of those janky recreated pieces where you imagine something happening, and it works really well as a comic. I always think about there are lots of places that people can do drawings that you can't take photos in or record video or audio, and those are great times that you can use comics as pieces of journalism.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think that all types of journalism have the same ethical foundation, which is people are trying to be fair, they're trying to be accurate, they're trying to be relevant, and they're trying to tell, a story that can engage people. And whatever medium you're working in, it's the same ethics. But with comics, because it's a different medium, there's a slightly different approach, such as doing some, like, visual fact checking. You can send people your thumbnails and say, "Is this accurate? Would you have worn this? Does this scene look accurate to you?" I would say the ethics are the same, but you can have a slightly different approach because it's its own unique medium.
And you can also have, I think that you're able to change things to help a person be involved in your story. Like maybe someone would be like, I don't want to do this story if you're going to hear my voice or see me, but I will be happy to talk to you about this if you're drawing me and making me look a bit different, you know?
Yeah, it's really easy to anonymize people in a comic with the way that you're drawing them. So you can make them a lot more simple or change some aspect of them that they're not going to be, like, recognized by their employer or the police or whoever they're trying to avoid.
So comics can be a very solo art form, but you have a lot of contributions in the book from comics artists all over the world that talk about collaboration. So there's Avi Ehrlich writing about running a small press outfit. There's Omar Khoury writing about starting a comics collective. Eba Hilhorst writes about running a nonprofit comics website, much like the Nib. She's the editor of the Netherlands-based Drawing the Times.
Yeah, I get so annoyed by this myth that comics artists are solitary geniuses working alone to create their art, and they must not be disturbed, and they're, like, individuals. I find that, yeah, it's a very individualistic premise. And even if somebody is a really solitary artist working, like, mostly on their own, they still have a support team. They have editors, they have publishers, they probably have a partner who's making them food. They have people who are booking them for events, and so there's a whole support staff that's, like, supporting their work. And so that's why I say all comics are collaborative. Even if you're making your work on your own, like writing, editing, publishing, you're still, like, in an ecosystem that's collaborative. And we wanted this book to feel like a collaboration top to bottom, so that it's not just our voices in it, but sort of capturing the spirit of, like, all of these great cartoonists out there making their work these days and all of them supporting each other. So the comics industry these days is very, like, mutually supportive. People want to cheer each other on. They want to buy each other's work. They are constantly learning from each other and trading skills. And so we wanted the book to feel like, yeah, this collaborative chorus of voices.
And also, like, I think that there's lots of instances of people that I know of, like, trying to create a thing to do with their friends, whether it's making an anthology or, like, working in another way. And the artists that you talk about, Avi and Omar and Eva, they're all trying to gather community around them. I mean, I think Eva's main motivation for starting Drawing the Times was to, like, provide a place for people to publish, yes, but also to, like, meet other like-minded artists who wanted to create similar work. So, yeah. I think the community is really beautiful and important to nonfiction comics as well.
I'd love to talk about Crucial Comics.
Yeah, so let's hear about Crucial Comics, the nonprofit comics press.
Yeah, so after the Nib closed in 2023, we were really searching around for a place to keep publishing work, you know, and I was just putting my comics up on Instagram. That didn't feel great because every time I publish a comic on Instagram, it makes money for Mark Zuckerberg. And I'm like, I don't want my comics to just be benefiting a billionaire, you know? And when you publish on Instagram, you're so constrained by the algorithm. You know, if you write about political topics or sexual topics, it can be really heavily censored. And so I was like really dreaming of having a place we could publish that would be mutually supportive, that when I published a comic, it helped boost other people's work too. And so my friend Audra McNamee and I decided to create a small press, Crucial Comics. We publish narrative nonfiction comics, and it's a teaching press, which means we run classes online in comics making, and then money from the classes goes to support the comics that we publish. So we make money from the classes, use that money to pay the teachers, but then also to pay for comics that we publish on the site. And we started up last year. After our first year, we published about 65 comics, and we were able to pay teachers about $16,000 and cartoonists over $6,000. And so the scheme is working. It's going really well. We're small, so we're trying to like not spend more money than we have, which means we only publish about one comic a week. But it's really, really wonderful to be able to say yes to people's comics and get them out in the world. And we've set up an editing program so people can pitch comics and be paired up with editors who will help them develop their original comic. And some really beautiful comics have come out of that process. So that's my main focus these days. That's what I'm really proud of.
Well, let's see, anything else?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like I've leaned in the last few years to living in Australia. You know, I moved back to Australia in the middle of the pandemic, and I now have, you know, a picture book about Australia's first female parliamentarians looking for a toilet. There wasn't a toilet for them, surprise. But I've also done a lot of work in that space, and I'm about to start adapting Picnic at Hanging Rock as a graphic novel for the National Library in Australia. So I'm going to be starting working in fiction.
That's the Peter Weir film. It
Yeah,
was a book before that, though.
so the original book is by Joan Lindsay, and it came out
Okay.
in 1967.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's my next big project. We'll be working on that. Yeah.
Well, you've been listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and we've been talking about making nonfiction comics. That's a book that's been co-authored by our guests, Larry Harris and Shay Merck. Larry and Shay, thank you both for joining us today.
No, thank you
Thank you
so
so
much for
much.
having us.
Yeah.
Pleasure.
And for those listeners who might be interested in finding out more about making nonfiction comics, where would they look?
Well, you can find Making Nonfiction Comics at the library. You
Yeah.
can find it in any
Any
bookstore.
bookstore. And if you can't find it and you're at a local bookstore, ask them to order it in for you because it might be like, you know, they might order three of them. You don't know.
Very exciting.
Well, we hope that everybody's been enjoying this special programming for our KBOO Fights Back end of year membership drive. Before we go, I'd like to remind all of our listeners that this community radio station needs your support. To become a member of KBOO or to arrange for a donation of any size, please visit kboo.fm/give. You can also text KBOO to 44321. Or if you prefer, you can mail a contribution to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. Again, the webpage is kboo.fm/give. On your mobile device, you can text KBOO to 44321. And of course, you can reach us by mail at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. Thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. You can find an archived version of the show later today at kboo.fm/wordsandpictures. And be sure to follow us on social media at Words and Picture.